kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I mean, what is IGN going to talk to you about strings up a cat's ass?
Probably not. No, I mean, you never know, I guess, but probably not. I'm gonna guess. I mean, fingers crossed.
Like their plans fell apart, and it was like I didn't want them to miss it.
Yeah, they needed a place, and I wanted them to be right there in it. So,
all up in that.
Up just like the SML podcast.
Up in her. So, what's up, everyone? This is Joe. This is the SML podcast, episode number 212. Getting up there.
212.
No Chris today, but Ian is back. Ian, how are you doing?
Doing well, Joe. Doing well. How are you guys doing? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I don't know how Chris is doing. I'll find out when I talk to him again.
Hopefully he's doing okay.
Which will be Friday.
Friday.
Definitely not tomorrow afternoon.
Gotta get down on Friday.
Pretty much. So, you are joining me just for a little bit today because we are going to kick to an interview in a little bit. I talked to, Richard Wood of Stormcloud Games about his new game Brutal, which we're also going to review beforehand.
Which sounds really cool and looks really cool.
Oh, it's fucking awesome. Spoiler alert, I guess. I don't know.
Right? I would play the shit out of it.
But the way our show works, I'm sure a lot of people know, is that we do live shows, quote-unquote live shows, with people who join us for the interview. And then I'll do separate interviews that I usually, you know, mix with another interview or something like that. But if I don't have another interview, I get someone like you to join me to record a little mini thing, and then we'll throw to the interview.
Yeah, kind of like a pre-show, not connected directly, but we'll cover part of what's in the actual interview.
Yeah, yeah.
You have later.
But we can't just be like, hey, here's the interview. So, let's chat about a little bit of news beforehand, and we'll do a quick review. I saved this news for you because I know you're a PS4 owner. I'm hoping you saw the news that the PS4 system software 4.0 is going to have a bunch of updates. Did you check out that info at all?
No, I hadn't heard about that. Great. I would love a lot of updates. it hasn't been too bad so far, but...
Yeah, the 4.0 update is actually going out for beta testers now-ish, I think. Okay. It is going to bring, let me see if I can pull up the actual web page instead of going off of my notes, since that'll be a little bit more detailed. But the Sony site is acting all butthole-y right now. Here it is. System software 4.0 will feature. Bah, 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 bah. the system update 4.0 is going to feature, first off, a UI refresh. So a little adjustments and improvements to the main user interface.
Okay.
New system backgrounds, a revised What's New tab, smaller pop-up notifications, redesigned system icons. It's not going to be anything like any massive difference. It's just going to be a fresh coat of paint, as they say.
I can handle that. I like a fresh coat of paint. And if this picture on the PlayStation blog is anything to say about it, it looks like it'll be okay.
Yep. It's going to have a quick menu. So they're kind of taking a page off of the Xbox One where, if you double tap the home button, a little menu pops off from the left that has like, you know, look at your friends, your party, your achievements and all that stuff. They're going to have a quick menu where during a game or whatever else, if you just press and hold the PlayStation button, it pops up a quick menu, again, from the left, so it doesn't look like they're just blatantly ripping it off. It just covers a portion on the left-hand side that has you, you know, you could close the game. It has the power option there. You can adjust, look at your friends, your status, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So, I'll read this later. You know, when I'm not sitting here recording and stuff. But that sounds good. I'm fine with that.
And they mention you can customize the quick menu, which is different from the Xbox. You cannot customize the one on the Xbox. So hopefully they have some good options of what you could throw on there. That could be really cool.
That, or I hope it's not just rearranging all the icons. That would be the vaguest use of the word customize ever.
Well, I don't really care about the community, so let me just move them to the bottom. So I don't I don't fuck around with the communities at all on PlayStation. No,
it's really generally it's not worth it to deal with the public. especially in video game world, because online people that play games, they can be dicks.
Yeah.
They can be, you know, unpleasant in some other ways.
I was in a community for Amplitude that was created by the guys at Harmonix, and I was like invited to it before the game was out. And I never went in it. I never read anything. And the only thing I ever did with it was go into my notifications and clear off the info that said, "You have new messages in the community." I'm like, I don't.
Did you ever read one to get a sense of what it was like?
It was like a message board.
Okay, so it was just a bunch of
People talking, sharing clips, stuff. I didn't care.
Yeah, I see. They do that. It just doesn't seem. No.
I know Xbox is coming out with something similar later this year. Maybe I'll use it more, because when I fire up the PS4, it's mainly just to play games, like do what I need to do. Get off the pot.
Right, because you don't know when this thing's going to explode or whatever is going to happen to your next PS4.
Exactly. It might catch fire any minute.
Yeah, and this is number 17, right?
Close.
You've had 17 PS4s?
19? Before, no, 43.
The 43. Answer,
anyway, another update is they're overhauling the share menu, which, again, I rarely ever push on the fucking thing. But like the quick menu, it's not going to like bring up its own screen. It's going to pop off from the left.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could select video clip or screenshot or whatever else. You can also now upload longer video clips to Twitter, where instead of a 10 second limit, you have 140 seconds.
Yeah.
because Twitter bumped up their limit. So now.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
When did they bump up their...
Yeah, I don't fucking know.
So, okay. Who cares?
It was like, well, we have 140 characters. Let's have it be 140 seconds, because people need to watch 2.5-minute long video clips on Twitter.
Yes. Yes, they do. That's good for a trailer.
True. True.
But, I mean, a lot of trailers are between 1 and 2 minutes.
True.
Or they have longer ones.
That could be handy. That could definitely be handy.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
good stuff there.
I mean, yeah. I would like that.
I think the biggest addition to the PlayStation 4 software update is they are adding folders.
Oh my god.
So, you can have a fucking folder on the desktop, so you can actually set aside the games that you give a shit about and put them in there.
And all the stuff that you
quick access to
and don't care about, you can put elsewhere.
To my knowledge, you can't sort this stuff once it's in the folder, but
really?
At least it's in the folder.
Okay, so you kind of just dump it in there and it goes in there.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. They're also making changes to.
Carry, huh? I would assume. I said you can cherry pick, I would assume, what goes in the folder. So yeah. It's going to be the stuff you want.
Yeah, you create a folder, you name it, and then you get to select what you put in there. And it might be ordered depending on how you put the stuff in there. Like, the most recent stuff that you put in there is at the front of the list.
And the older stuff is...
And maybe updates based on what you play. I don't know. I didn't have any hands-on time with it, and clearly it's just in beta right now, so I don't know for sure. I'm going off of what's on their website, so damn, I don't know. They're also...
your fucking pants.
God damn it. And my mom is calling me. What the hell?
Oh, well, that's lovely. We're trying to do a show here.
I accidentally hung up on her. Shit.
Oh, sorry, Mom. Oh, no.
I hit the wrong thing. She's gonna be pissed.
No, you should call your mom back.
Nah, I'll do it after. Actually, I should probably do it now. Fuck it. I know how to edit things. They are also making big changes to the library on the PS4.
You did talk about that.
I talked about the folders. I didn't talk about the library.
No, you did. Okay. You're right. Okay.
Yeah. They're adding a new tab. You know how they have everything, games and apps? Now they're going to have another tab called Purchased, which shows everything that you own downloaded and not downloaded. So, like, the games one is just going to show shit that's on your system. And then the Purchased tab is going to show everything.
The entire contents of your...
I wish they would do what Xbox does, and that they have games, they have apps, and then they have ready to install, which is the shit that's not installed.
Okay.
But it looks like this is going to have games, apps, and then fucking everything. So there's just a lot of redundancy there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people will either deal with it or they'll bitch about it and they'll change it again.
Yeah, everyone has to bitch about things.
Yeah, no, and they're going to. I mean, it's a change to something.
Yeah,
and the diehard.
It's amazing that Sony's finally listening enough to like add folders. So
yeah,
maybe with the PS9,
it's better than their usual fuck you.
Yeah, pretty much. They're also adding some trophy improvements. There's going to be an offline mode. If you can't connect online, so you could view the trophy collection without connecting online.
Cool.
I like this addition. They're going to let you view the content of a hidden trophy.
Really?
Trophies will still be hidden by default, but now you can choose to see what the trophy name and info is, which I like because there's a lot of games that come out that's like hidden trophies or hidden achievements, and it's dumb shit.
Yeah, it's just something stupid. You've done the same thing like 50 times.
Like, I can understand if it's like story stuff. Like, I'm cool with those. But when it's like kill 10 things at once, you don't need to hide that shit. Just let me know what the fuck it is.
Yeah, hide a spoiler boss.
Yeah,
hide an area or some sort of augmentative achievement. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. They're also changing the icons that show how rare a trophy is. Instead of four boxes that fill up, the icon looks like a pyramid with the ultra-rare trophies at the top.
Interesting.
So.
Interesting.
And then they are updating the look of the user profile, making it easier to see relevant info for a player at glance. For instance, you can now see your trophy progress compared with another player right from their profile.
That's cool.
And then they say that there will be more features that aren't available in the beta, so stay tuned, but who knows. It's nice that they are making improvements on it. It's
a new coat of paint is always good.
It seems like they're taking steps, but there's still other things they could do, so hopefully they'll make more progress as it goes on, but we'll see when we get our hands on it.
It is a beta, so they listen to the feedback of the beta testers. So
a beta.
A beta.
They've got the beta software. The beta. The red beta.
Yeah. the wife beta.
Oh God. But yeah, awful. PS4 getting a system update. Who knows?
Sometime.
I know that the beta's rolling out now. I just don't know when the final release is going to be.
Well, we'll have to see how long the beta lasts.
They'll have more info, including launch date, in the coming weeks. So it'll be in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, there you have it. PlayStation 4 updates.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So it could be within a couple months.
Indeed. So let's do two quick reviews. The first one we're going to talk about is Brutal, developed by Stormcloud Games. It released August 9th for $14.99. This is the one that we're going to have the interview with Richard Wood later on in this show. But this is a top-down roguelike action RPG, kind of like Gauntlet, but randomly generated.
Yeah, but with the ASCII art.
Yes. Yes. It all the characters in the game are ASCII art. So
yeah.
Like enemies are like,
enemies, weapons.
The walls. I love that when you zoom out and view the map, it just looks like an old school text created.
Yeah, I was
game. It's nuts how it looks. The game is basically all black and white with little patches of color here or there.
Mm-hmm.
You create weapons in the game by collecting letters.
Yes.
So you have to collect all the letters to make weapons, and then they have colored letters that you collect those to make like enchanted weapons, like, you know, red letters will create a fire weapon. Blue letters will make an ice weapon. It's ridiculously fun. And clearly we'll cover that more in the interview ahead, but you know, I gotta give it my official stamp of approval, right? You there?
I missed that. Come on.
The hell happened?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what the hell happened. I didn't do or change anything.
America.
Fucking technology.
But yeah, I still got to give the game a stamp of approval, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, especially if you're going to interview the guy.
Oh my it god, looks, this episode is a awesome shit show.
Whatever. It was, we only dropped part of the call, and then, you know, your mom called.
Oh, this one's a winner.
Yeah. It's good. You've got a lot of editing to try to do.
Okay. I know. I gotta work for this one. But, yeah, for $15, I think it's a solid buy it. It's a lot of fun. Four different classes, lots of different skills that you could upgrade. The randomly generated levels are a lot of fun. I died a lot by falling off the levels, which was kind of irritating, especially when the game is basically you have one life.
Oh, yeah.
You can earn more by doing like offerings to the gods, so you okay. can earn more lives, but falling to die sucks.
Yeah.
And we cover and
there's
that.
No way there's no way to pick up your items or anything, or
well,
because I want to buy it. It sounds really cool.
Well, when you die, like, and you have extra lives, you just resurrect where you were.
Yeah.
So right. You still have all your shit. It just
okay.
Yeah.
But if you die, and you don't have extra lives, then
it's your game over, and you start from scratch.
Yeah. It's okay. Okay. So it's like it's real roguelike.
Yeah.
Automatic hardcore.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Game's awesome, though. So stick around and listen to the interview. And yeah, thumbs up on that one.
Definitely.
So the other game to talk about is called Planet of the Eyes. This is developed and published by Coco Cucumber. I love that name. It released August 24th, 2015. So this game is a year old.
Yeah.
on Steam for $9.99, but it was recently featured in the Humble Monthly Bundle, so that is why we are giving it a fresh look now. CJ Greenwood, our friend CJ Greenwood, wrote us a review, and Ian, you've got that, so let's hear it.
Yeah, no, this is CJ's Planet of the Eyes review. Planet of the Eyes is a 2D puzzle platformer. It has an amazing art style that made the game visually gorgeous. Very colorful and vibrant. It is. I watched the video. It's so cool.
It looks really good.
It does. You play as a robot that has crash-landed on a mysterious planet that's full of danger. As you progress, the story is told to you by audio logs that you have to pick up by left by a man who felt like he was a close friend of yours. He went to the planet before you were sent there, knowing that you would be there soon, to leave the logs and let you know what's going on and what to watch out for. The story gets pretty deep and emotional towards the end, although obviously I won't spoil it. From the video I watched, yeah, it looks kind of slightly tear jerky.
Oh god, I don't want to cry in a video game.
It's yeah, but I mean, then he goes on to talk about the gameplay. The gameplay is pretty good, although you play as a robot, you actually can't jump very high or far. So you're limited in your distance there. Thankfully, the game is more puzzle-based than platforming. The puzzles won't have you scratching your head for too long. They're somewhat easy and manageable. There was only one puzzle in the game that was a bit confusing, but after backtracking a bit, I found that I'd missed something that helped me out. So you might miss a puzzle clue if you're not careful.
So like every puzzle game?
Yeah, generally like every puzzle game. The game consists of a lot of moving objects into position so you can jump on them or riding an object down hills that are covered by hazardous things such as lava. Alternatively, there will be moments where you have to use an object to activate something else like a button. So maybe you use the physics of the game to let something hit a button somewhere on the other side of the room.
So like a puzzle game.
Like a puzzle game. The controls were responsive and felt smooth, which is always a plus in a puzzle game. There's even a button to dance, and if you do it, you'll get an achievement. That's so sweet.
It's adorable.
It is. Speaking of achievements, this game is an achievement hunter's dream. All the achievements are pretty easy, and the game has a level select after you beat it. So if you miss something, you can go back to whatever you want.
That's a plus, definitely.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, and with as gorgeous and interesting as the game looks, why wouldn't you want to go back? The music for this game was lovely and relaxing. It starts as ambient sounds and picks up into actual music during epic moments, which I was a fan of. However, if you die, the music also dies down and into the ambient sounds again. So, just as you're wandering through the level, it's not going to be intense, but as you come upon like a big monster or whatever.
Dynamic soundtracks are always cool.
I love dynamic soundtracks. That was part of the Wind Waker, actually, which was really enjoyable.
I like Wind Waker.
It's a fun game, even if it's a bunch of sailing on water. a bunch. Anyway. The price may be a bit steep for some people, even only at $9.99. The game is very short. It's only about an hour and a half. I felt like it was good length and didn't drag on, yet didn't feel unsatisfied either. I did beat the whole game in one sitting, which is something I rarely do. But honestly, it didn't even feel like an hour and a half because I was enjoying myself so much. So it's a quick game.
I would rather pay $10 for a quick hour and a half game that I finish than pay $10 for a 20-hour epic that just slogs on.
Yeah, that's just so, a bunch of crap.
So I can understand if it's short and sweet and it feels good.
Yeah.
Rock on.
Yeah, definitely. Another very nice thing is that I didn't experience any bugs at all, not even small glitches, which is great. There were no moments which aggravated me because something didn't work right or anything like that. It all just worked. Overall, I'd say if you have $10 and you want an enjoyable experience, buy it. If you're turned off by the shortness of the game, wait for a sale. But everyone should be able to experience this game. It's truly a work of art. it is. It's a gorgeous looking game.
It really is pretty.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the fire, the electricity, the lava, the backgrounds, the foregrounds. It's pretty. It's real pretty. I do hope it comes out to consoles as well, so more people can enjoy it. I noticed on their website under the press kit that mentions Xbox One as one of its platforms.
That would be cool. I hope it's still being planned. I know the game is a year old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pretty much a year old. Like, we're a few days short, but yeah, it's still pretty much a year old. But maybe they've been using the year to work on that port. Who knows?
On the console version. Make it as perfect and enjoyable as the PC.
I will have to drop a line to the PR guy and see if it's still something that's being worked on or what's going on with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to know. Even if it's that short, I would check it out. It looks and sounds cool. I like the audio tapes. I listened to part of the gameplay.
Nice. And it's sitting at very positive on Steam right now for recent and overall. So it looks to be
a universally enjoyed
game.
Yeah, over the course of its year of being out on Steam.
Everybody likes it. Good stuff.
Gorgeous stuff.
So Brutal, Planet of the Eyes, PlayStation's getting software update. Anything else you want to talk about?
Anything I want to talk about? Yeah. I haven't heard anything lately except stuff from Japan that is kind of boring, except for Final Fantasy XI Mobile. I know that Final Fantasy XI is a bajillion years old. It used to be on some consoles.
Oh, speaking of Final Fantasy, officially Final Fantasy 15 has been delayed.
Yes, the 15 delay.
Yep, they confirmed it very, very early Monday morning, at like 3 a.m. my time. The video popped up online, and they're like, "We're very sorry for the delay, but they need the extra time for quote unquote additional polish." And we'll be adding minor bonus content to make up for the delay. It's not a massive delay. It got bumped 2 months to November 29th, which I've been telling, like, I'm actually super happy about this.
Yeah, it's already been in development for, what, 10 years?
Something like that.
Something retarded.
But I'm actually super excited about this because it was coming out September 30th. In September alone, for the stuff I keep a list of stuff that's coming out that I'm wanting to pick up. In September already has ReCore, the BioShock collection, Dragon Quest VII and VIII on the 3DS, Forza Horizon 3, and then early in October has Gears of War 4 Ultimate Edition, Rock Band Rivals is coming out in October.
Oh.
The Last Guardian, World of Final Fantasy, Skyrim is in October. And then down in November, Dishonored and Watch Dogs.
Okay.
So coming at the end of November, perfect. Yeah,
some good stuff.
Perfect.
Some good stuff.
So it's not sandwiched in between Forza and Gears of War for me anymore, so I will have plenty of time to play it in November.
Yeah, definitely. All of it sounds great.
So yeah, delay I'm actually happy about.
I'm fine with it. Like I said, I heard about the delay last week. It just said that the big guys were getting together and they were going to talk about having to push it back and stuff like that, which is fine. You know, to work on things and polish. Extra polish is always good.
I'm totally fine with that. It's not often that there's a delay and you're like, oh, hey, that's actually better. But hey, if it leads to a better experience overall as I knock shit off my desk, rock on.
The exposure that they've got is ridiculous. I mean, they've got Florence and the Machine doing songs for the game.
Oh, yeah. For the soundtrack.
Yeah. I hadn't listened to any of them yet, but it sounds really cool. And there's a movie. There are, like, side games. It sounds and looks awesome. It's a lot from Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
And
then
from
they have what, like an animated movie and then like a kind of live action-y style movie. And I think both of them are included in the Ultimate Edition of the game, the Ultimate Collector or whatever.
There's Final Fantasy 15 Brotherhood, which is the anime.
And then King's Glaive,
like,
which is...
It's like a five-part something anime that explains how they got together in their relationship. And then King's Glaive is a movie about King Regis. Is that it? Regis?
I haven't kept up to date on any of it.
It looks cool. I mean, I've seen the Japanese trailer and I've seen the English trailer, and it just looks awesome.
Well, King's Glaive, that's getting like a super limited theatrical release, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I heard something about it coming out in the theater. I don't know the details on it, but yeah. It's a lot of stuff, but it sounds really cool.
So yeah, bring it on. Bring it on. Gonna be a crazy holiday season for sure. I know it seems like
that's a lot of games.
The holidays get crazier and crazier with games every year, and this is certainly no exception. And hopefully we can cover a couple of the big ones, but I doubt it because we're just a piddly little nothing show, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, covering small games is good. It's good exposure for them.
But, we are your indie showcase.
Right. But it's fun to cover a game that everybody is playing, and that's big.
But yeah, I guess for now, we are going to kick off to our brutal interview. We'll toss a song here in the middle and then go to the brutal interview, and I guess we'll catch you next time. Ian, do you have any final words?
You're all beautiful people, and I hope you find some great games to play this week or this month or this year. And I hope I come back.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the SML Podcast still. I am joined right now by my interview calling all the way from Scotland, Richard Wood. How are you doing?
I am great, thank you. It's a nice day here, actually. It's not raining. It's not windy. It's a nice Scottish day. I can't complain.
I thought Scotland was nothing but like grey with cliffs everywhere.
Basically, yes. You have summarized Scotland pretty well. No, it's nice. It's nice. It's a lovely landscape. We just get a very short summer, sadly, but it's a very, very nice place.
And you are from Stormcloud Games, correct?
I am. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So for the people who don't know who you are or what Stormcloud Games is, give us the rundown of why you're on the show right now.
Sure. So I, as you said, I'm at Stormcloud Games. My title is producer, but for Brule, the game we're going to chat about, I did most of the marketing work. I also helped with some of the QA effort. So our game just launched on PS4 on last Tuesday, on the 9th of August. It's our first console and PC game as a studio. So we're here to chat about that, which should be quite exciting, hopefully.
Indeed. And for those who don't know what Brule is, give us the sales pitch of the game. And pardon my silence, there's apparently a string coming out of my cat's ass right now.
Nice. Dude, as someone who's got a small dog, I have definitely seen very similar. Not string, admittedly, but grass is always a fun one.
This is the professionalism that you get by coming on the SML podcast.
Dude, this is real. This is real world things right here.
Most people would be like, "Oh, I have to cut the stream for a second. I'm dealing with an issue right now." But
no,
I am too lazy to start the show over. So
yeah, you should go keep going. I'm on a total tangent here, but the back of my house, there's fields and there's cows there sometimes. And my dog, Jax, he's a Boston Terrier. He once saw the cows, ran towards them as they were facing away from him. And he barked at these cows and he got a fright and they pissed all over my dog. And if you ever want a bad smell, it's a small dog covered in a luminous yellow cow pee. So it was, I think I had to wash him 4 times that day. It was absolutely awful. So
that sounds like
I am aware of. Fun is definitely a word to use. So I am well aware of pets and their funny quirks.
Brule.
Yeah.
So dealing with a string coming out of cat's ass is Brule, but so is your game.
yeah. So Brule is a, we can describe it as a homage to the classic ASCII games that a lot of people grew up playing. So, you know, you get these great games like NetHack and Rogue and Brogue, and they were some of the very early games on PCs, on desktops, if you will. And basically they were, you know, top down and you were moving through a world. It was all turn-based. Our game's real time, but they were turn-based. And you were controlling like an at symbol. That was your character. And everything was made up of characters from the keyboard, because back then there was no art. There was no graphics. It was like, you've got this keyboard, you can make something happen. So you made it all from that. So, you know, you had like the hash symbol was the walls. You had like S was a skeleton, O was an orc, and so on and so on. You know, it was kind of the early days of gaming, if you will. And our game is a take on that. It's a 3D version of those classic games. And we kind of describe it as when people are playing those games, you know, even nowadays, actually, a lot of gaming is your imagination. It's what you kind of read between the lines, what you think's going, what you think's happening. So a lot of people believe that when they're playing these games, they were kind of walking through a dungeon. They kind of imagined it in a 3D, like, real setting. Kind of like you're playing Dungeons & Dragons, you know? It's a lot of imagination going on there. So we've created a 3D version of that. It's kind of like in Tron, when the guy falls into Tron, and he's in the game, he's in the machine. Yeah. Kind of done a version of that. So it's a 3D roguelike and dungeon crawler. The aim of the game is to get from floor 1 of the dungeon down to floor 26. Along the way, you're going to obviously find enemies. You're going to learn new skills, learn new abilities, you're going to craft weapons, brew potions, and kind of get stronger as you progress down. So it's got this kind of those features you expect to have, like crafting and potion brewing and, you know, learning new skills and abilities. But the game also has permadeath, which is what these games had as well. So if you die as you're playing through the game, your run starts again. So a bit like, you know, Rogue Legacy or Super Meat Boy and so forth. So the game's got that. But then it's also got two-player couch co-op, so local co-op, and a dungeon creator as well, where you can make your own levels and then share them online for your friends to play or anyone in the world to play.
Yeah, I've dabbled with the dungeon creation a little bit, but I'm one of those gamers who I'm better at playing, not at making, so I really didn't get too deep into that.
Yeah, me too, don't worry about it. And I worked on the game, and I'm better at playing than making, so don't worry about that.
Let's see. I'm trying to think how far I got in the game. I want to say like around 9 or 10th floor before I lost my final life. I did end up praying at the shrines and earning a couple extra lives or a couple extra chances as I played. But my only deaths in the game came from falling off bridges.
Gotta be careful. Gotta be careful.
That was it. I seem to do great, you know, health is getting low, so you retreat back, eat a couple of pizzas and fish and find one of those apple trees somewhere and
yeah,
bring it back and stay competitive, but just jump wrong one time going across a bridge and
yeah,
it's nothing but tears.
I think it's not funny, but we did a lot of playtesting internally, and then we took the game to E3, and we took the game to PAX and PSX and so forth. And jumping wasn't that much of a problem, but I think in hindsight, the reason for that is when you are playing the game at convention or, you know, wherever, you're generally speaking going a little bit slower than you would if you're playing at home. There's a bit more trepidation there, I think. So, you know, you had people kind of running into rooms, killing things, but from watching people play on YouTube or live streams, it's kind of half and half. I think half people struggle to jumps a little bit, other maybe half don't. I think it's because watching them, I've seen people who will just kind of run down corridors and try and make the jumps as fast as they can. Whereas players who kind of, you know, they'll do a room, kill the enemies, run to the corridor, and they'll slow down and really take their time on the jumps, if that makes sense. So I think there's maybe just a strange mix of fast-paced combat, running around, killing things in one room, and then that transition to platforming is maybe too abrupt almost, if that makes sense. I think it's one of those things that I think you do get used to it. It's something we didn't really see when we were doing playtests, but I do, having watched people play on YouTube or Twitch, which is a different atmosphere anyway, because you're live streaming it to someone who's watching it, but I think that's maybe something that people struggle with a little bit.
I know one of my deaths I'm going to completely blame on the DualShock controller. First off, I've never been a fan of the controller, so that's why I'm always complaining about PlayStation. I just don't like the controller. And when holding right and attempting to jump and go over, I wasn't really holding right. I was holding right and down.
Okay, yeah.
So I, you know, my character jumped down and right and completely missed the platform. So I blame that one on the DualShock. The other one, I was in a corridor that you just had to throw in, like, poison floors in the game.
yeah, we did.
So I'm trying to jump as much as I can to avoid the poison floors. And there was, like, going down steps, so I jumped, and then I jumped again because there's an enemy. And when I landed directly in a gap.
Okay, gotcha.
So that was well done on my behalf as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's tough. I think with the, on kind of tangent here, I think with the, so obviously this is a PS4 game, and it's going to PC later on, but it's first launch PS4. So I've spent a lot of time with the DualShock controller, and I actually began to really, really like it. I felt it was light, it felt nice, I felt like it fit my hands a bit better. And then very recently I moved back to the Xbox pad, and it's just such a good controller. I just forgot how good it was. There's something, I don't know, it's I can't explain it. There's something just very, very good about the Xbox controller. It's maybe one of the best controllers that I think I've ever used on a console. I think it's just incredible. And I haven't used the Pro controller yet, which I heard is even better.
Oh, you haven't used an Elite?
No, not yet. Oh. No. Yes, is it called the Elite or the Pro? I can't remember.
The Elite. Yeah, Elite. Xbox Elite.
Yeah, so I haven't used that yet, but the standard controller is so nice. It just feels really good. So I think I've gone from, I love this controller, to actually, no, I still prefer the Xbox one.
I am holding my Elite in my hands right now.
Oh, I'm jealous.
It is worth every single penny.
Yeah.
Just the added weight of it, the added click of the thumbsticks. It just, oh, I love it.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely jealous.
So speaking of Xbox controllers, are there any plans for an Xbox version of Brutal?
Truthfully, no plans.
No, why?
I know, yeah. Well, I mean, so never say never, obviously, right? You can never say never, but the game. So maybe the game. So going back a little bit here, kind of segueing a little bit and go back in time. When the game was first sort of concepted and prototyped, we were kind of come up with the idea. I don't know what the game was. And we're showing it to various other studios that we knew. You know, it's kind of like, you know, working in games, you know everyone in games, just the way it works. So we're showing the game to other studios, going, hey, what do you think about this? This is what we're working on, what are you guys doing? Kind of, you know, some collaboration there, some ideas. And someone said, hey, this game's really cool. why don't you show it to Sony? You know, Sony are doing a really big indie push right now, and you know, see what they think. So our founder Frank sent it off to them, and he was like, "Hey, this is what we're working on. If you guys like it, let's have a chat about it. But if not, not a problem. It's obviously going to be quite a niche game, so it's not for everyone. We get that." But they loved it. They were huge fans of it, and they signed the game, which obviously helped us with development costs and actually building the game out. So that meant that we got, you know, PlayStation dev kits, test kits. We kind of had an account manager at PlayStation Europe and America, which helped a lot with the store stuff. So we're a console exclusive on PlayStation for a set period anyway. But yeah, that's the main reason we launched on PS4, was because they kind of believed in the game and helped us develop it and take it to that next level. And that's been great for us. I mean, I think if we had launched on our own, you know, because I think one of the questions we get is, why did you launch on the same day as No Man's Sky? And we can get to that later.
Oh, God, yeah.
but there's some good answers here. But if we hadn't gone with them, you know, if we kind of gone more indie, if you will, maybe across all platforms, I think we would have got lost quite easily. It's got a much smaller team and our budget's a lot smaller. So that's a long way of saying no plans for Xbox just yet.
Just yet being the important word, yeah. To me at least. Every time we do these interviews, I have to sit here listening and trying to hear how specific the wording is. And now I'm over here thinking, is it a 3-month window, a 6-month window, a 1-year window? Because I know even if you have guys working on the game right now for an Xbox version, you can't tell me.
Exactly.
So
what I can tell you is, it's gonna if it ever does come out, it'll take longer than one day, but it'll be less than 100 years. That's what I can say to you. That's the window that I can say to you. If it ever did happen, that's when it would come out.
Sounds good. So the year 2116. You've heard it confirmed on the SML podcast. 2116. It will be on the Xbox 46.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Something like that.
Xbox 1-2.
It'll just turn into symbols by then. It'll be the Xbox Omega dot Epsilon or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Sponsored by, yeah, exactly.
Sponsored by Doritos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it'll be branded like a NASCAR. So have adverts all over it.
The Doritos Xbox, powered by Surge.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you guys started with PlayStation, and how long ago was it that you talked with PlayStation about getting the game on the system?
So I think it roughly, give or take a month, let's say, but I think from chatting to them and launching, it was just over a year and a half, so like 1 year, 8 months-ish. And that was the initial, because we didn't have a game, we had like this, what we want to do, and we kind of built a concept trailer from that, actually, you know, with our assets and the intended gameplay and design we were going to go for. So there wasn't even actually a game at that point, it was more of a proof of concept from an actual trailer, which is quite bizarre, but that's how we did it.
All right, and so then a year and a half later, and it shows up on PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
Same day, like you said, as No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
What the hell were the people at Sony thinking?
Yeah, they're thinking, man, this brutal game's going to destroy. No. You know, it's hard, right? Because there's a couple of things that go there. One, our launch date was actually locked in for a while. And at this point, No Man's Sky was still June. You know, they were still June. But obviously, they were pushed back and I think that's fine. Like, I'm, as a developer and a consumer, I'm of the opinion that if your game's not ready, don't release it. Like, take the extra time, make it better, because the game will be better for it. You'll feel better for it. And the person who buys it is going to get a better deal for their money. So I'm all for people doing that. So it was, at first, we were like, oh, God, we're launching the same day as No Man's Sky. But we kind of just had to, because we're part of the PlayStation Play program.
Yeah.
So for those that don't know, that's basically, they've just done a program where every single week a brand new game came out, an indie game on PlayStation. And that game, you could pre-order it beforehand. If you bought it, you got money off. You then got a voucher for another game, and you got various kind of bonuses and stuff. So there's quite a lot of incentive to buy these games. And because we're doing this, I think it meant we're on the store roughly 3 weeks before our launch date. So we had like 3 weeks of promotion on the store for a pre-order, as well as front page on the store. on the website, through their channels, their blog. So we had like, you know, we couldn't really, well, we couldn't afford to buy that marketing, you know. So for us, that was fantastic. So we had that. And then you could never tell, but I just had the feeling that No Man's Sky wouldn't give out their keys until like the weekend before it came out.
Yeah.
So I felt like if we went the week before that, you know, so if we basically said that the game comes out on the 9th, you can only buy the game. It's not out yet, but you can buy it. So if we put our embargo date on the 2nd, that means we're going to have all our reviews out a week before No Man's Sky. That means everyone in the press and the industry can play the game well in advance and then can play No Man's Sky. And that may encourage them to play it because it's something to review before that game comes out, you know?
Yeah.
So we kind of pushed for that. We kind of, look, you know, we're just going to do this. And people, I actually really appreciated that because they're like, oh, this is great. You know, we're not reviewing this game on the same day as No Man's Sky. So they were pretty happy with that. A couple of people were kind of confused going, do you mean to have the embargo a week early? And we're like, yeah, here's why. We're very honest about it. And they're like, oh, cool, that makes sense. So we got a lot of coverage for that. You know, we're on Giant Bomb. We're on Kind of Funny. You know, Kotaku. We got a lot of coverage because we're kind of in that point where no other game was launching because they were scared of No Man's Sky. So there's kind of this awesome window where we could just get good coverage, which is pretty fantastic. So yeah, I think it was risky, but you know, I said we're currently until Tuesday anyway, and then I think Bound comes out on Tuesday. We're still featured on the PlayStation homepage. We got a blog post with them. They shared our stuff on Twitter and Facebook. So we got a lot more coverage because of that than we would have done if we went on our own on, say, you know, August 13th. So from a business point of view, from a dev point of view, it made a lot of sense for us to go on that day, regardless of No Man's Sky.
Nice. What's the reception been so far?
Really good. Once I've been really, really happy with it. I think the majority of people like it. Some people don't, but that's games in general, right? I mean, you look at the reviews that No Man's Sky's getting, and like one guy's like, this is the best game ever. And then one guy's like, this is the worst game ever. And it's like, yep, that's entertainment. You know, some people like it, some people won't. So you can't really complain about that. But no, I'd say the, you know, if we had to break it down, 80% of people, roughly, I'd say are into it, and 20% don't. But we always knew that. We always knew the game would be niche and it wouldn't appeal to everyone. And that's fine. You know, there's no way that an indie dev's going to make a game that is for the masses anyway. You are trying to target people that you think will maybe buy in smaller numbers, but will love the game and support it in that way. So, but yeah, people are enjoying it. A lot of folks still playing it, which is exciting and really great. A lot of levels being made on the level editor, like I mentioned. So a lot of kind of unique content going up there. So yeah, it's been fantastic. It's been really, really good. We've had a lot of positive experience and buzz around it. And just seeing people on Twitter, you know, who've bought the game and support the game, kind of trying to push it and go, oh guys, don't lose this game on a No Man's Sky. You know, don't get lost under the hype. It's been really kind of encouraging and just very nice. So yeah, long story short, yeah, very, very good so far.
On a personal level, I think I've put more time into Brutal than I have No Man's Sky.
Nice.
Because I picked up the limited edition of No Man's Sky. I was so excited for it, and it's not what I expected. And I'm not going to say it's a bad game, because people out there are probably going to lose years of their life to this game. But to me, it's just like, I wasn't expecting all the survival elements of the game, like constantly maintaining your resources and your gauges and make sure that your weather hazard, whatever crap, doesn't deplete too much. So you got to find more supplies to refill that gauge and then go fill this gauge. And then, oh, well, you're walking a decent amount, but guess what? You need to get a different thing that's over here and blah, 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 blah. I just wanted to explore shit.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, I think that the game will appeal to a certain audience or person. I think they're going to freaking just love it. You know, I think they're going to be over the moon with it. But it's not for everyone. I think, you know, they're in a tough spot where they did an AMA yesterday or a few days ago on Reddit, which is really interesting. And someone asked them, you know, do you think your game was overhyped? Do you think, you know, it was pushed in the wrong direction? And it was Sean Murray, the founder of the studio, the head of the studio. I'm not sure his exact title. But he said, you know, he's like, I understand what you're saying. I understand what people think of that. But he's like, you got to, as a team of 12 developers, if someone says to us, hey, we're going to put you on the main stage of E3 and on, you know, all these events, like, for, would you ever turn that down? And I think from a business point of view, that even from like a, just a creation point of view, you know, that you would never turn that down. It's like me saying to you, oh, we're going to send you to PSX and you're going to host the event for us. Like, you wouldn't turn that down, because it's great exposure. It kind of, it pushes your craft to the next level. And you could argue they showed off the wrong things, or they showed in a way that was perhaps didn't represent the final product, and that's a different thing. But I think they had to go to all these events, and they had to show off as much as they did, because this was their, you know, the founder, Sean, he sold his house to start the studio, you know, he put all his money into it, and if it went wrong, that was it, you know, he was out. So I think you have to push that, I think. So I don't personally blame them for the marketing they did. Potentially the trailers were, you know, the early trailers and the final, you know, when you think of the game you're going to make, what you think in your head and what you release are different, right? Because what you can imagine and what you can do in the same time are very different things. So potentially those trailers were just too ambitious, and the game isn't like that, and the game's still good, but when you look at those trailers, those early trailers, it's not what you thought you were going to get, sort of thing. So I don't know. I definitely lean towards, I think they've done a great job, and I think they should be incredibly proud. It's not for everyone, but I do think it's still a good game.
No, I don't doubt that it's a good game. It's just, like, personally, I was expecting something closer to a game like Journey or another game of the play scenario, Abzu. I was expecting something more like that, where it was just, the main focus was exploration, and it didn't have those survival elements in there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I felt like, oh, well, this isn't what I wanted. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I enjoy what I'm playing.
Uh-huh.
I feel like could it be enjoying it a lot more without the survival stuff in there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I mean, they haven't said this, but they haven't confirmed this. Sorry, let me phrase that. But they have mentioned that they want to add in, you know, home bases. They want to add in carrier ships. They want to add in a bit more like permanence to the game, and that's what excites me. Like, I love the exploration side of thing, but I love the idea of having a home base that, you know, that's what I'm traveling to and from. If that makes sense. So I think after a few more updates, that's when I'll jump into the game and really check it out. But yeah, it's tough. I think it's a very tough one. I don't envy them. Well, I envy them a little bit, because I think they made a great game, but I don't envy them for kind of maybe the backlash they're getting from certain people who didn't get what they expected to get, and, you know, are very upset about it.
Ah, well, what are you going to do?
Exactly. Yeah,
all you could do is maintain the game that you made and hope it finds its proper audience, and given how much No Man's Sky is selling, I think they'll be okay.
I think
they'll make rent this month.
So
have you played any other of the PlayStation Play games that have come out, any of the other games in the lineup that you're a part of?
No, I bought Abzu, but I haven't played it yet. So I've got Abzu sitting ready to go, but I've not actually played it yet. I was waiting for a bit quieter to actually sit down and play, because I've heard it's a game that you can do it in one sitting. Obviously, you don't have to. You could kind of carry it out and do, you know, to take a longer to do it, but I quite like the idea. Similar to Telltale games, quite enjoy those, doing those in one sitting. So definitely forward to checking that out.
If you have 2 hours spare, I think you could get through Abzu.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's what I heard. I think you can maybe take longer if you take, you explore everything and really take your time, but I'll probably just go for that sort of 2 hour ish mark and try and do it in one sitting.
Tried to explore everything, but it wasn't until much later in the game I realized that there's probably some earlier areas that you could get out of the water and walk.
Oh, wow.
I didn't realize it until you needed to do that for the one part. Like, oh man, I wonder what I missed by not doing that. But even still, I think like 3 hours you could probably find everything. It's not a long game, and for the most part, up until this week, Abzu I thought was going to be the best of the Play series, but I think Brutal is my favorite of the four. Headlander was okay, but I wasn't a fan of the shooting mechanics, and I haven't had any interest at all in Bound.
Yeah, no, I thought Headlander looked good, but it didn't interest me personally. I thought it visually looked amazing, but it didn't interest me. I think Abzu was the one that I was kind of most excited about. It's just more of an experience, you know. I thought it looked very unique and different, and it's something I want to just to try and be a part of.
Is it cool being in a program with the four of those?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I mean, we had no idea what the games were going to be. So we just knew that we were going to be the third game, and we're kind of waiting to see what the other games are going to be. So, yeah, I think they're all great games, you know. Like, even if you like Bound and Headlander, I think they look amazing. They're not games I would play personally, but they're definitely proving very popular. There's a lot of hype around Bound, obviously, it's not out yet, but... yeah, they're all great and great games. So us to be in there with our first ever game as a studio on PS4 on console, I should say, it's pretty exciting.
So first game, this is your very first game, and you're one of the highlighted games for a PlayStation program. That's got to be a crazy feeling.
It's pretty exciting, yeah. I mean, so the studio formed about. Oh, maybe roughly a year before Brutal started. But as a new studio, the aim was to kind of get used to everything, you know, get used to the processes, the flow. You know, there's a lot to do when you're in your studio. You've got payroll, you've got setting up the office up, getting the equipment in. You know, there's a lot to do when you kind of leave an established studio and start your own business. So actually, the guys, before I started, the guys made a bunch of mobile titles because they're very quick to do and turn around, and you can kind of, you know, you work together as a team that way, you know, you can put coders together, artists together, and make something and create something. So they did that for, it was like less than a year, actually. And they actually did kids' games because the main guys in the studio, most of them have kids, so they were making games that they felt their kids would enjoy and their kids would play, their younger kids. So did that for a while, but then eventually decided to change focus because the games they were making, they were fine, they were good, they were very nice, very stylistic, actually. But it wasn't what they were passionate about, if that makes sense. It was more like they felt it was a good idea, a good opening in the market to make these kids' games. But it wasn't kind of things that they were excited about or things that they would play. So that's how Brutal came about. It just was like, hey, you know, what games would we play? What games do we want to make? And that sort of throwback to games that they used to play kind of just made sense. And I came on board around that time as well. So yeah, first PS4, first console or PC game. Prior to that, a little bit of mobile stuff. But yeah, pretty exciting, pretty bizarre, but yeah, it was pretty great, to be honest with you.
Do you guys see yourself sticking around with console stuff or going mobile?
Oh, no, definitely sticking to what we're doing now. So I think we're, definitely sticking around to what we're doing. Definitely.
Are you going to stick with the exclusive kind of deal, or are you going to try branching out and covering more platforms?
I think that'll depend. I mean, so with Brutal, we're a PS4 console exclusive, but we're time exclusive as well. So we are coming to PC at a later date. Can't say when yet, but that is happening in the future.
Then Xbox in 100 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, between one day and 100
years. I am holding you to that.
Come find me in 100 years. We'll chat about it.
It's 2116.
Yeah, I'll be here any second.
Richard!
But no, for our next game, I mean, who knows? You know, I think as an indie studio, we're not tied to anyone or anything. So, honestly, who knows? No idea. Could do anything. Could do an NX game. Who knows?
Are you revealing your plans now? You're working on NX now. Has Nintendo signed you to an exclusive contract?
Right, guys, cut. We're out. No, honestly, right now we're kind of just happy to be done with Brutal. We're kind of proud to get out there, and what we do next is still up in the air. But it could be anything. I think that's quite the exciting thing. You know, it could legitimately be anything, which is quite nerve wracking, but also exciting.
Nice. Are you? Kind of like thinking along, staying in the same action hack and slash genre, or is it going to be like a complete switch to like an anime dating sim?
How did you know all these informations? Our NX anime dating sim, god damn it. No, legitimately, at this moment we've got some ideas we're working on, but there's nothing set in stone just yet, so it could be anything. I think the thing that I'll always say is we want to work on something that we want to play ourselves. So, you know, whatever we make is going to be a thing that we actually want to play, and you can imagine spending a year and a half on, or longer, depending on what the game is, and lovingly creating and editing and tweaking. So I think that's important. So we're now trying to find the right thing, you know, what is the right fit for us to dive into and go for it. Because we're a small studio, yeah. You know, so we need to be realistic as well, but also push ourselves. I think, you know, you want to make every game better than the last. So it's like, we've got our benchmark now for Brule, which has done well. We're really happy with it. And it's like, what's the next thing? You know, how do you better that? And I think that should always be the goal, to constantly improve and get better and make the next great thing.
Makes sense. So before diving into your anime dating sim with Sudoku elements on the NX, are you looking into added content for Brutal? Any kind of DLC, extra characters, new levels, stuff like that?
Yeah. So we haven't thought about that yet, to be honest with you. I think the main aim was to get the game out. The main aim was to get the game out there, see what people thought. Because, you know, you test it internally, you take it to these events, but, you know, maybe like 100 folks play it, and then you open it up to thousands, and what people think and the feedback is all different. So you try to take that all on board and see what needs changed. Does anything need added? Is there a desire for extra stuff? I think that's how you kind of need to react to it as a smaller studio, because you just don't know. You know, you've got an idea and you've got a hope for what's going to happen, but you really don't know. And I think if we do anything, if we started
you said
it,
do.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. If we do anything, and we started it a month ago, I don't know if we would have done something that people want, if that makes sense. You know, I think if we don't listen to the feedback and get that stuff first, you just can't know. So at the moment, there are no plans, in truth, but it doesn't mean that it can't happen.
Any thoughts to an online mode?
No thoughts to an online mode. Just being honest, you know, I think it's one of those things that I think a lot of games have came out in the last, even like 5 years, you know, a good couple longer than that, where they've added an online mode and either doesn't work, or it's like it feels shoehorned in, or like the base game doesn't feel as good. And I think when you're any team size, right, or you're any, no matter what team size you are, I think you need to realize that everything you add in, you know, is time and resources. So if we added in multiplayer, like from our four programmers, who would we put on it? And if it was our, you know, our gameplay programmer or AI programmer, you know, it did both, that means we're doing less gameplay stuff, you know? So you kind of need to balance it that way. I think if we tried to get it in, the single player game would have been worse for it, or the dungeon creator, or, you know, the leaderboards, or co-op and so forth. So local co-op. So we just couldn't add it in and do a good job of that and the main game. And we've been asked for it quite a few times, and I appreciate the sentiment and the comment, and I think it's a very fair request. I do think it's a very, very fair request, don't get me wrong. But I think we would have been in a worse position if we'd done it and it wasn't good, you know? Like, yeah. People will remember something that sucks way more than they'll go, I wish the game's good, but I wish it had X. But if it was like, this game sucks and it has X and it still sucks, then it's like, well, what's the point? So it's a difficult balance, but I think we made the right call for our team size and the time to make the game we had.
So no thoughts of a post-launch edition of like maybe a DLC mode or a free update mode, anything like that?
For online?
Yeah.
No plans for any online multiplayer yet, or all right. At all, actually.
Hey, I gotta ask. It's my job.
No, definitely not. Again, I think it's a fair question. I think, you know, if we were to start again, and would we consider it more than we did originally? Yeah, probably. But again,
Brutal 2 confirmed to have online. You heard it here.
Yeah. There you go. Boom. Heard it. But no, I think if we started again, we would consider it. But again, you've got to weigh these things up. I think hindsight is a great thing, because, you know, if you go back, you could pick all the things you got wrong, or things you had to do twice or change. If you take all those things away, then potentially, you know, there's more time to do it. But when you're making a project, when you're doing something, trying to figure out if something's fun or not, there's a lot of iteration. There's a lot of, you know, that doesn't work, that didn't work. So you spend a lot of time trying to find the fun of a game. And it really is true what people say, that the game, you know, if you work on a game for, I don't know, say 2 or 3 years, whatever the time frame is, it really isn't until the end of the project that the game is fun. Because before that, you've got individual features that are cool, but they don't form a whole game, if that makes sense. Or you get a game and then it's buggy, so you need to fix the bugs, and then you get the point where you're done. So you get a sense of of fun and enjoyment in small sections, like vertical slices. But it really isn't until the end of the game where it all comes together, because you're tweaking and massaging all those elements.
Nice. Have you heard any feedback so far, or things that you might go back in and change or alter?
Truthfully, no. I mean, I think the only thing people have really said is the jumping. The platforming, I guess.
Falling off and losing all your lives and whatnot.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's not everyone, I think. So it's something that we're keeping an eye on, and we're seeing how that develops, sort of thing. But I say right now it's been quite a positive experience. I think people are enjoying the game. You know, I mean, I think it's I believe personally that we released the game genuinely a good time. I know that sounds strange, but I think we released it at a good time. I think the price point we did was good, both for the launch price and also for the pre-order price as well, with the discount. So I think people are happy with the... I think that people feel like they got value for money, which I think is very, very important.
Oh, I definitely agree. It's nice seeing people still putting out games that aren't $19.99 all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's a hard thing to decide, but I think you need to genuinely look at your game and think, you know, what would I pay for this game? You know, remove your attachment to it. And for us, $14.99 was like, that's a great price. You know, that's a price you'll get hours of fun for. You could replay it with the multiple runs. There's a dungeon creator, play with a friend. And we just felt like that was a good price. And I think that is another reason people are enjoying it so much, is because it does feel like it's value for money. It's not, as you say, $20, $30, $40, $60, whatever. It's well priced for what it is, I think.
I will say, this game makes me wish I had friends. Just bring some friends over, hook up a bunch of controllers, and get a four-player game going on. I think that'd be a blast.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is that thing as well, where obviously the game, in terms of the you know, the mechanics and the art style, is very nostalgic, right? We're paying homage to a lot of these older games. But Couch Co-op's the same thing, right? Couch Co-op is kind of a dying thing right now. I think there's a lot of players who enjoy that kind of thing, enjoy the two-player or X-player local multiplayer. And for us, they kind of tied it into the theme of the game. It's like, we're doing this nostalgic-based game, and that feature is less common these days. So let's go with that.
It's always good having friends. But I'm stuck trying to teach cats how to use controllers. It doesn't work that well.
You never know.
So long. People are trying to give me tips on how to, it's like, put peanut butter on the thumbsticks. Like, they,
oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, my dog is a big fan of peanut butter. Big fan.
Like, they'll move a couple of times, and then they'll just walk away and quit and lay down.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
friggin' lazy cats. Learn how to play a game.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, guys. What are you doing?
My wife is giving me the weirdest looks right now, because all she hears is me talking about cats licking peanut butter off a controller.
I mean, it's not an unfair look to give you, let's be honest.
I got to do what I got to do. They're going to learn. I'll make it happen.
That'll happen.
So I might as well go into a handful of the gripes I have about the game and see if you guys have any, if it's like on a list of stuff you might update or enhance or anything like that. Have you considered allowing people to zoom out the controller a bit more, or the camera a bit more, like give it more of an overhead view?
For the map, for the extra single player.
Yeah.
We hadn't initially. The camera is based on room size, but I think that is a fair bit of feedback. And it is on a list somewhere. And I think that is fair. So it's just something that we've heard a lot of, but I think it's one of those quality of life things that I think, even if you don't realize you want it, if you had it, I think you would like it, if that makes sense. So
yeah, the first thing I did was I hit like down on the analog stick to see if it would zoom the camera up a bit more, up and out a bit.
I got you.
Do you have any intentions of possibly making the hunger mechanic in the game, like, able to be turned off?
No intentions. And there's reasons for that.
Survival,
right?
Elements.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I suppose, yeah, if you don't enjoy that. But there's a couple of reasons, right? So, I mean, one is that in the game, you can do special moves, you know? So, like, your fists and all your weapons, they've all got special moves. And those take one charge. So you do your L1, R1 together, you do a special ability, and then that will recharge over time. But for players to keep doing it over and over again, it's going to make it too easy. So the more you attack things, run about, jump, you know, you do actions, the more hungry you get, which kind of just makes sense.
Yeah.
And that means that those abilities recharge slower. So if you want to use these things constantly, you need to go and explore the dungeon, find food and eat that food. So it kind of, it's a mechanic to stop people from constantly doing special abilities. But it also acts as another thing, which is allows you to gain health back. Because obviously the food you eat will also give you health as well. So it's quite a nice way of balancing difficulty and progression at the same time.
Makes sense. Although I always find myself with like full health, but my hunger's all the way down.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm just wasting food when I should be saving it for.
Yeah. But I mean, so that there is the joy, but I guess that's the risk reward you have, you know? So if you want to keep doing special abilities, special moves, you can do them anyway. They'll just recharge slower because your hunger's low. But you could just not eat food. And you could just save it and go, you know what, I'm going to not care about my abilities right now. I'm going to use them less frequently, only when I'm in a jam. And I'm going to save my food for later levels where I know I'm going to be low on health. So, you know, it's kind of like a choice thing at that point. And that adds, again, another survival element to the game.
I am happy that your hunger, when it's a zero, it doesn't make your health start dropping.
Because I know, definitely not.
A lot of games are like that, and fuck those games.
Oh, no. We wouldn't do that. We wouldn't do that. Ours is purely to kind of counteract the ability to do so many special moves.
Man, hunger elements. I'm telling you, survival elements are taking over games. It's scary.
Yeah. I'm real life, some would say. I'm real life.
It's like I'm hungry enough in the real world.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be hungry in video games, too. I'm too lazy for this.
It's tough life.
Have you considered running off a cliff or falling off a cliff instead of being an instant death, maybe being like half your hit points are gone instead?
No. that was an easy one. No. You fall into your death, you know, it would be weird to be like, oh, I've fallen, but now I'm back, you know, just kind of. It'd be, you could make some reason why it happened, but no, I think that's definitely part of the roguelike element, the difficulty of the game, if that makes sense, as part of the harshness, if you will. And obviously, you can get the extra life, and if you get them and you fall, you can reincarnate and carry on with the game. Which I guess for those who don't know, in the game, you can get extra lives. So you'll find loot in the world, you offer that to the gods. If your offering is deemed acceptable, based on like a hidden amount, you will get an extra life. So when you die, you'll respawn where you died, you can carry on. And you can get unlimited number of these extra lives. There's no cap. So that's kind of our extra life mechanic in the game. Obviously, you can save the game as well, come back to a later date. But generally speaking, we are going to kind of keep that death mechanic in there.
How is the guy able to jump down the trap door, land on the bottom floor, and survive? But if he jumps down a pit, he doesn't just land in the bottom floor.
It's a really small gap from the end of the level to the next level. But the abyss is obviously, that's the abyss. You're just falling forever. It's over.
I think it'd be neat, kind of like the Toe Jam and Earl games, where if you fall off the stage, you just drop down to a lower stage.
It'd make it a lot easier, though, to just kind of, you could do that constantly and get to the last level.
That's why you would go up instead of down. When you land, if you don't
that's
go down
enough,
the trap door, you lose half your health.
That's fair enough. They did that in I think it was Legend of Grimrock, where you're trying to get from the bottom to the top of a dungeon, whatever. But if you fell, you'd go back to the previous floor sort of thing. So I have seen that in other games.
Yeah. So yeah, those are my thoughts, at least.
Yeah, I think they're fair. The first one definitely is a good point, and I appreciate that one. But I think the second two are kind of part of the game's difficulty. Something kind of is tied to the overall core of the game.
I totally understand. So can you see Brutal becoming a series? Are we going to see Brutal with a 2 instead of a T?
Oh, that is nice. That is nice, actually. And I never thought of that for the logo.
Brutal.
Yeah. Right now, in truth, no plans at the moment. I think when you finish a game, when you spend so long making something, or you put a lot of time into it, you kind of want that distance almost, you know, because you want to recharge the batteries and feel fresh again. So I think going into the exact same thing again can sometimes be a bit sort of like, oh, here we go again sort of thing. But I think when you take that break, I think you can all recharge from that and kind of get back into the swing of things. So possibly in the future, definitely. I have no idea if it's going to happen. It's not my decision. But right now, we're definitely looking to try some different things. But we might go back to it in the future, because I think it is a very interesting game. And I think we can definitely, with the base that's there, take it to another level if we do a sequel in the future.
You could use that name, Free of Charge, as well. It's all yours.
Thank you.
Brutal.
Brutal.
Just give SML Podcast a shout out in the credits.
Yeah, in the credits. Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah, definitely.
So when you weren't developing Brutal and you haven't been working on this game for how long, what have you been playing? What are you enjoying right now?
Just a game of life. Different things here and there. I went back to Skyrim again. I got kind of hyped for the remaster and did a playthrough of Skyrim. And that was fun. That game's great. Thoroughly enjoyed that. And I've just started playing for the first time Dishonored. I missed it when it first came out. So I'm playing that for the first time now, because I know the sequel's coming out in November. And I always meant to play it. So I guess they're older games, but yeah, Skyrim, which is a huge game, obviously, and Dishonored. I'm playing those right now. And a little bit, I got into the Elder Scrolls Legends, you know, the card game that came out. I got into the beta.
Yeah.
For that. I played a little bit of it. It's quite nice. It's a fun game. I'm not a huge card game guy, but it's kind of nice to kind of just chill, play it for a little bit, and jump out again. So it's quite a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm playing Dishonored right now and thoroughly enjoying it, and planning to start at some stage Dark Souls 3. But when that actually happens, I'm not too sure.
Have you played the other Dark Souls games?
I have, yeah. Yeah,
okay, okay. I had to make sure. Every developer we talk to, when we ask what games they're playing, I'd say 95% of them mention Dark Souls. And when you said you really haven't played Dark Souls 3 yet, I was worried. But you've played the others, so we're good.
I played the others. I thoroughly enjoyed them. You were
keeping up appearances of game developers enjoying Dark Souls.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I think it's just... actually, for me, it's less of the... It's less of the gameplay, it's more of the... I just love the aesthetic of the world. I think they've done a really great job of making it kind of interesting. And I want to visit that place, you know? And it's good gameplay, don't get me wrong. But it's just, I don't know, it's just it's something I can kind of get lost in and I kind of lose hours to, which it's a good and a bad thing, I guess. But it's a very well-done franchise. I haven't played Bloodborne. I'm sure I would enjoy it, but Dark Souls 3 is sort of my next on the agenda.
What else this fall are you excited for? Any of the big new releases that you're excited about?
So, I mean, it's big, but it's not new. But the Bioshock remaster, I'm pretty pumped for. I love Bioshock. It's one of my favorite games of all time. So I'm pretty excited for that.
I'm so jealous because Game UK has the Bioshock collection in a steelbook.
Mm.
And America hasn't got anything like that. So I've been considering just importing it from Game so I could get the steelbook.
Nice. Definitely. That game, I actually love all of them. I think 1, 2, and 3, they're all different, but I actually enjoy them all. For a while, I told myself I didn't like 3, but I think I just don't like 3 when I compare it to number 1, if that makes sense. I think as a standalone game, it's actually very good. But when you compare it to to Rapture, I think I prefer Rapture as a world over... what's the... Columbia.
Columbia.
So Bioshock remaster, definitely excited for that. Actually, Skyrim remaster as well. Whether I play it or not, because I just played it again, I don't know. But that. And then I wasn't too excited for Battlefield 1, but now I've seen some gameplay, some footage of it, I think I'll probably get Battlefield 1 as well, kind of have it as like a casual game in the background, if that makes sense. So it's not a game that I'll play all the time or consistently, but as a nice kind of pick up and play game, I think it looks very, very enjoyable. And, you know, I love the setting, go back to World War One. I think it's pretty cool, to be honest.
Everyone's going nuts over like Battlefield and, you know, new Call of Duty, new Gears of War coming out, The Last Guardian, and I'm just sitting here like, I can't wait for Skyrim again.
It's gonna be amazing. I'm pretty stoked for it, to be honest. I'm glad.
Wasted my life on that game once before. It's gonna happen again, and I can't wait.
No, the game's fantastic. I actually so I stream on Twitch every day actually. I do it as a way to improve my on camera skills, my marketing skills, and it's just I quite enjoy it. But I think I started playing Skyrim in like May, I think, and I played it solidly like every day on Twitch until about 2 weeks ago, because I did everything. I did all the DLC, all the side quests, I did on Legendary. And that game's amazing. I love that game. So I'm pretty excited for the remaster. I'll probably give it a month or so till I play it again, because it'll be quite I'll know the game too well at that point. But I'm looking forward to creating a new character and just delving right into that world again, because it's just so well done. I much prefer that game over the Fallout franchise, personally. But I enjoy fantasy-based games more. So it appeals to me on that side. So, yeah, Skyrim and Bioshock. Odd to say that because they are both remasters and not new games, but those are the two that I'm stoked to play again, and I think they're going to be fantastic.
So you mentioned streaming on Twitch. What's your name in case any of our listeners want to check you out?
Yeah, it's Retro Crumpet. Thank you very much.
Retro Crumpet?
Yeah, it's my Twitter, my Twitch, and my YouTube, I think. It's all Retro Crumpet. Now, I found out recently that crumpets are a British thing, and every American who I've spoken to has been like, what's a crumpet? What is this mythical, delicious thing you've made up? But it's basically, I describe it as a mixture between a muffin and a croissant. It's like a breaded treat that you put in the toaster and put butter on it, and it kind of melts into it. But it's not as flaky as a croissant. It's got a bit more of a sponginess to it, like a muffin, and it is delicious. So yeah, so Retro Crumpet is my Twitch and Twitter name.
That is a fantastic name.
Thank you.
What kind of schedule do you have on there?
I basically what time it is now, but that doesn't make sense for your listeners. So I stream every day at 7 a.m. GMT, which I think is like 11 p.m. PST. And then whatever that is in other American time zones.
Yeah, I don't know. There's numbers there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but 7 a.m. British time, which is, again, 11 p.m. Pacific time.
Man, time zones are weird.
Yeah, they are. They are tough. It's odd in my chat as well, because I stream before work, and I've got folks on my channel who it's like midnight for them, but then I've got other folks on my channel who are in Australia, and it's like 7 p.m. for them. So it's like we've got the full spectrum. It's odd every day to be like, I'm eating breakfast, and they're like, I'm going to bed, or I'm eating dinner. And I'm like, cool. The world's odd, but I like it.
You stream Brutal on your Twitch?
I haven't yet.
How dare you?
I know, how dare I?
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. But no, the reason was, I think it would be weird, you know, because obviously I emailed people with the game and codes for it, and the people on YouTube playing it, and the people on Twitch playing it. And I think it would be odd if I then jumped in and was like, developer plays his own game and kind of took away from their viewers, maybe, you know. I don't think that kind of makes sense from a marketing point of view for me anyway, and people probably wouldn't care. But
you're just teaching all those punk sons of bitches how the game is played.
That's true. But yeah, I always felt a bit odd to kind of jump in there and maybe take away from people who were actually looking to, who bought our game and were looking to kind of promote it and so forth. So I'll do it eventually, but I held back for now. I'll do it in one sitting one day and just kind of blast through it. Do a one run.
You could just fuck with people and stream the Xbox version that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, or the NX version.
Yes, the NX version.
Yeah, with the Sudoku minigame. Definitely. Definitely.
Oh, my God. Well, I know we are creeping close to an hour. Is there anything else that you wanted to chat about at all?
I mean, honestly, once we covered the string in your cat's ass, I think we honestly peaked the show at that point. So it's been downhill since then. The show was getting no better than that, definitely. So I think it's been a slippery slope since that point.
I'm thrilled that you enjoyed talking about a string in my cat's ass.
Yep.
It definitely was a
one-time thing, but it definitely was enjoyable.
It's been a pleasure talking to you about the string, about the cats, about pulling the string, and then about that game thing that you did.
Yeah.
For real, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I love the game.
Thank you.
I know that you cannot say anything at all about it, but my fingers are crossed that it comes to Xbox, because it'd be a shame if more people don't get the chance to play this game on other consoles. So I am over here, my fingers crossed, and I hope it happens. But if not, I'm gonna keep track of what you guys are doing, because you are put out an awesome game. You're an awesome guy to chat with, and I thank you for doing it.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on. It's been I always enjoy speaking games to people. You know, I think I will happily come on to the show anytime you need a co-host or a guest to chat games or game development or whatever the latest news is. So, because it's nice chatting games. You know, there's it's pretty good as things go.
I'll have to keep that in mind if you're ever free at whatever time we're doing a show. Because I think you're the first person we've had from Scotland as well.
Nice.
I think you're our first Scot.
Nice. Thank you very much. Yeah. So, and maybe the last, who knows? But we'll wait and see.
But before we end this show for good, I've tried to hold off to the end and keep my childishness contained as long as possible.
Oh, God.
Richard Wood. How many times are you called Dick Wood?
Very rarely, actually. Very, very rarely. A couple of times, maybe, but yeah.
What were your parents thinking with that name?
I don't know. It's, yeah. I like it. I think it's that thing where I hear it now and again, and then I think it doesn't faze me in the slightest. I don't know why. It just doesn't bother me.
Probably because you grew up with it, but...
Yeah, probably, actually. Yeah, probably. So I think now and again, people will say it, trying to rattle me, and I'm like, yeah, that's my name. So I actually don't hear that often. I'm quite laid back when it comes to that sort of stuff, so I think it kind of works in my favor.
I hope you can at least understand that I had to mention it.
Yeah, definitely. It's not a problem.
But I waited till the end. I didn't
want to. Like it. Yeah.
Didn't want to lead off with the Dickwood thing, but
yeah, you want to keep it classy by chatting about your cat's butt. I get it.
Cat's asshole, and then Dickwood at the very end.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's got a good flow to it, so I can see why.
Richard, do you have any final words to end this episode for our listeners?
Keep buying games, because games are awesome. That's it.